That was oud music, recorded in Israel also several years ago. I just want to make one or two comments myself on that tape. One is the statement there over and over again that, of course, without a settlement of the Palestinian problem, there will be no peace for Israel. There's somehow implied in there the statement that with the settlement of the Palestinian problem, peace comes automatically for Israel. And I think that's probably much too easy a statement to make. That is a problem in the Middle East. I don't know the way that tape makes it out, that is the problem in the Middle East. Anyway, on the phone, I have with me now Joseph Almala. Hello, Joseph.
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi.
Joseph is the editor of Jerusalem Times, a Palestinian newspaper here in town. Joseph, you were telling me yesterday who Shafiq al-Khut is. That's the man who's interviewed on that tape. Do you want to mention that again?
Well, let me mention something else before I answer Shafiq al-Khut question. This song is not oud, the one you were playing before.
Oh my gosh, you're right. I wasn't even listening closely, you know?
It's a folklore song. You know, there's no oud or anything in it. It's actually the people sing.
You know, I was reading my notes and not listening to what was going on in my own ears. That shows you how nervous I've become. You're right. What's it a folk song about?
It's about a guy. His name is Gzayo, or a deer, Gazan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Something like this. And they changed the folklore song to a revolutionary song. It's about Palestine and fighting. And all. But it's very dear. It's the guy, like the song, it was saying it. He's from Gaza, from my hometown. Something like that. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Nice folklore song.
Okay.
We'll go to Shafiq al-Khut. Shafiq al-Khut, he was in Canada just, I think, the last month or maybe a few weeks ago. He came to the east of Canada. And he was the PLO, or the Palestine Liberation Organization, representative at the United Nations during the debate on the Palestinian question. I'm not sure if he's going to come during the Habitat conference or not.
So he was, in fact, a fairly high-ranking person within the PLO.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, he is one of the leaders, no question about it. You know, he is one of the... He is very famous among the Arab people. He used to be an editor of many newspapers and magazines, mainly in Beirut. Actually, he was founder of one of the Palestinian groups, revolutionary groups.
Which one?
It's called the Palestinian Liberation Front.
And is that now a member of the PLO?
They joined the PLO. They joined Al-Fatah, actually. They joined Al-Fatah, I think, in 1969 or 60.
Okay, Joseph, I'm an ignorant Westerner. Tell me a little bit about the PLO. All we know about it are the attacks it makes on civilians and that kind of thing. What is the PLO in totality?
The PLO is a political organization. It's really more than anything else. It's the PLO is there is a representative of different groups, mainly the executive.
What are the different groups? The groups themselves are military groups, though, right?
There is four guerrilla groups in the PLO. And there is, like, the executive committee of the PLO, it has 9 members, right? 4 of them represent 4 different groups, Al-Fatah and Saaka, the one from Syria, and the Popular Front, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and other group, too, I think. I can't remember what's the name of it. And the rest of them are just independents. Some of them, like one of these executive members is a priest. He was deported from Israel in 1969, I think. And there is a sheikh, a religious leader too, a Muslim leader in the PLO. And the PLO leadership consists of all kinds of people. It is not like Al-Fatah there, and Al-Fatah has her own line.
One couldn't say then that the PLO was by itself a revolutionary organization. It's just kind of an umbrella group of many little organizations, all with their own politic.
Yeah, but at the same time, they respect the decision in this executive committee of the PLO. The PLO actually it represents the Palestinian women, the Palestinian Women General Union, and writers and journalists, engineers, teachers. Oh, the PLO actually represent all the Palestinian people. They have...
How did it get formed?
The PLO passed many stages. Like, the PLO actually formed in 1965 by the Arab State Leagues. And Ahmed Choukairi was working in the Arab State Leagues, and they asked him to make something organization or some kind of organization for the Palestinian people to represent them at the Arab State League when they have Arab Summit conference or something. Then Ahmed Choukairi, he has his own policy, you know, and he tried to gain the support of the regimes, the Arab regimes, and he, in a way, he done some good things, but at the same time, the commanders or the revolution, the Palestinian guerrilla groups, they rejected him. They consider him as he is a politician. He is not really a revolutionary person. So they have some, you know, like, they get together and they kick them out. And they have, they had a new kind of organization. This is took place in 1969.
Well, right now the PLO, as I understand it, is a kind of a split organization. There is what gets called here, for some reason, the moderate wing under Arafat. And then there's what's called the Rejection Front under George Chabash.
Right.
Would you like to spell out for me what the programs of those two groups are?
Well, the PLO, let's say, is mainly of Al-Fatah, is the main group in the PLO, right? And the PLO, the Al-Fatah or the PLO, they ask for the Palestinian national rights and for a democratic Palestine. The Rejection Front consists of different small groups. One of them is the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. The leader is George Habash, and there is a few groups. One of them is the General Command, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command. It is split from the Popular Front. And there is another front from Iraq to present Iraq. I don't know. They call it the Arab Front.
And what are the differences between them? Between, like, the main group and the Rejection group?
The Rejection group, they think that Arafat or the PLO, they are going to Geneva, and they're going to negotiate with the Israelis. And they reject that. They reject the Geneva conference. This is the main...
So basically they reject the idea of talking.
They think that Palestine is a Palestinian state, and there is no compromise to the Israelis. There is no compromise to the Americans. They are against the American involvement in the Middle East. Of course, the PLO is against too, but... when you go really deep and really in details to see what is really the differences between them, you will see the PLO, they didn't have final decision in the Geneva conference. The Rejection Front, they think that the PLO is going to the Geneva conference, and they reject the Geneva conference. At the same time, they think that the PLO leadership, they are not a revolutionary leadership. It is not really very important. I wouldn't say it is very important because most of them, like the only difference between the rejection or the popular front of Palestine and El-Fatah, for example, or the PLO and general policy, is the we will see the popular front. They are in the what do you call it, the people organization among the in the camps, in the Palestinian refugees camps. They are working together in the occupied territories or in Israel. They are working in every field together, but they are not member in the executive committee. So they are not really against the PLO. They believe in the PLO. They are member in the PLO, but they are not member in the leadership in the executive committee. They think the executive committee should be more revolutionary executive committee.
But meanwhile, in both those camps, there are there are guerrilla actions taking place. It's not just the rejection front, which is
all of them under one group, under one name. There is not different groups like this is Popular Front or something. No, they work under they call it I think Popular Palestinian Organization or something like that.
Well, okay, Joseph, let's deal then with the way it looks to me. Why does either the group feel that that killing school children or that kind of thing is going to advance the cause?
Is what advanced the cause?
Of bringing about the Palestinian state.
You're talking about the,
You said that by and large the PLO is a political organization.
Right.
The Rejection Front has a different politic.
Right.
That they don't want to go to Geneva and talk.
Right.
But that both of them are composed of guerrilla groups.
Right.
Okay, so they're both political constructs of basically guerrilla outfits, and their politics are based on guerrilla struggle. What we know about here
right.
is blowing up schools and mining of soccer stadiums, blowing up of civilian buses, and blowing up of supermarkets and that kind of thing. Why is that seen as being a useful tactic by any means of achieving the objectives? Why does blowing up school children work?
I don't know. I don't think you want me to talk about this. But anyway, I said again. Well, I don't think they are to start with. They are children or school children. They are not absolutely like what happened in Kiryat Shmona. These people are 19 years old, and some of them over 20, and the youngest one is, I think, is 17 years old. You don't call these people, these young men and women.
Well, no, but yeah, well, it depends which case you pick. I mean, we can pick various cases. Some cases, they're, you know, the kids have been under 12. I don't know that much matters. Okay, let's say civilians. We'll ignore the ones, the young ones who've
general,
died.
Let's
just
general,
say civilians.
All the Palestinian guerrilla groups, they are against attacking civilian targets. They ask their members not to to attack any kind of a civilian target.
But the things we read about aren't...
Course you have to read about these things because this is the policy of the Israelis to show the PLO and the Palestinian resistance movement in general as a terrorist organization. I'm not saying that the sometimes there's odd incidents and the Israelis, they make a big fuss about it.
We don't hear about them attacking, well, let's say military bases or convoys.
They like the average operations, the Palestinian operations inside Israel these days, the average around 40 operations, military operations, every week.
40 operations per week?
Per week. You don't read about these things. You don't hear about these things because
that's interesting, yeah.
They are mainly military operations, you see. You only hear about the civilian operations, like if there is a hotel or if there is an apartment building.
So what are the other kind of operations? What happens?
Mainly they are against Israeli camps. They are against Israeli convoy or Israeli cars and tanks. They are against airports. They attack airports. They attack military settlements. Something like this. Lately, they were pushing the idea of, I don't know how far they're going to go, but they pushing the idea of attacking other, like, bridges, factories, and something like this. And the Palestinians in general, they were against that. They don't want to blow up factories or they don't want to blow bridges. It's very easy to blow up a bridge. But
now all this is a tactic towards the achievement of the democratic secular state, right?
Well, this is the methods the Palestinian using. This is the armed struggle they're using against the Zionist state. It is not. I mean, when we talk about democratic state, it's another political solution. But this is the...
It's a military means to a political end.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I mean, it's a different. Now, this is the people war. This is what this is their tactics, right? And even there are some Israelis working with the Palestinians. With the, like, there is about, I think there's about 10 of the of Israelis citizens, and they are Jews. They got caught and they are arrested and they are in jail inside Israel right now because they done some military operations with the Palestinians against the Israeli settlements or the Israeli system in general.
Okay, let's drop the question of tactic, and let's look a bit to the future.
Okay.
Could you tell me what the democratic secular state is supposed to be? We hear about it here. What's it supposed to be?
The democratic state, so far, all of the groups, all of the Palestinian groups, if they are Rejection Front or if they are PLO or any other group, they all accepted the idea of a democratic state. Actually, now they teach it even in the schools and Palestinian schools and in camps and to their fighters, to their commands.
This is a democratic secular Arab state, basically, isn't it? I mean, it's I think the official proclamation says a democratic secular state within the larger Arab nation. So it's still to be part of the greater Arab unity, right?
If you mean that they want it just for the Palestinians without Jews, I would say no. Actually, the democratic state, the idea, I mean, everybody could explain the Democratic Front the way he likes it. But the main idea of the democratic state is to non-sectarian Palestine, non-religious Palestine, a democratic state where Christians, Jews, and Muslims can live together. If they are Palestinians, or if they are Israelis, or anything, or if they are ex-Zionists.
Okay, now this will have two elements. One, the Jews will obviously be in a minority.
Uh-huh.
And you say secular means that there will be freedom of religious worship, right?
Right.
But religion isn't really the issue. I mean, only 18% of Israelis themselves, Israeli Jews, are religious.
Right.
The Israelis see themselves as being a cultural group and not as a religious group. And... I don't know that the mixing of two cultural groups, I mean, it was hard enough in Lebanon. That's not exactly an example of Middle East brotherhood and cooperation. I don't see how the mixing of two hostile cultural groups could ever succeed, especially when one group is being asked to go into a minority position.
Okay, well, so far, we have two, I would say, avenues toward the solution of the Palestinian problem or the question of Palestine. And we tried different, like, since 1936, we have, I would say, over 50 proposals or various formulas for the to solve the Palestinian question, okay, or the question of Palestine. And most of these formulas or proposals, they go in two proposals. One is to seek a compromise. What they're saying is, well, you know... everybody should compromise a little bit, and we can meet halfway. And if the Palestinians compromise, and we compromise, of course, everybody, like the Americans, the United States, they have many proposals to solve the Palestinian and based on compromise. The United Nations, even before the United Nations, the League of Nations or whatever they call it, they have their proposals. But all of these proposals or all of these ideas had only one thing in common. They were all rejected by both sides, by the Israelis and by the Palestinians. Now, the other thing, there is other avenue of solving the Palestinian problem is they saying, well, there is facts, there is accomplished facts. I mean, there is Israel right now, right? And Israel is a nation, it's a culture, it's a system. I mean, you can't say there is no Israel. And you have to accept what has happened, you know. And the Palestinians saying, well, we are Palestinian, we are a nation, and we are people, and we have our institutions. We have the PLO is accepted by the...
Well, would what's called the mini-state solution be an answer to that, both the Palestinian state and...
One of the compromise, I would say. One of the compromise solution. Like they're saying, well, the Palestinians, they should compromise and just take the West Bank and Gaza... And at its best, I would say in both of them, and that's the accomplished fact, because you can't just ignore the Israeli states and you can't ignore the Palestinians. They are there.
Joseph,
so a solution will have a mini-state in West Bank and Gaza, and let the Palestinians have their own state and forget about the whole thing, you know.
Do you think that might ever happen?
Well, this is what happened. What the way I see it, these proposals in general and the mini-state is an invitation for more violence, for more death, for more fighting. Because the Israelis, they think if they have another war and if they achieve some accomplished facts, they can gain more support, you know, more advantages. The Palestinians, they think if they fight and they continue the struggle, they're going to accomplish more facts, and they're going to have push, you know, a proposal is coming to their side. I myself would reject both of these avenues. I do believe, and this is my personal opinion.
Okay, make it fast, because I'm about to move on, yeah?
Okay, I do believe that we are human beings. If you are Palestinians, Christians, Muslims, or Israeli Jews, we are human beings. We have to reject violence. We have to reject all kind. Like, war is not really it's not really good to any of the group, right? Or the Palestinians or the Israelis. I do believe we have to live together and to discuss things together and to find a solution between the Palestinian peoples and the Israeli people. Let's say.
Okay.
We have to go back to Palestine. There is no question about it. We need our full national rights. And at the same time, you have to accept the Israelis as a nation, and you have to coexist with them.
Okay. Thanks very much, Joseph.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
That was Joseph Almala, the editor of Jerusalem Times. We were just talking about the idea of a mini-state, and the reason I was trying to raise that is because the next thing you will hear is a talk given by Professor Noam Chomsky in Vancouver, in which he looks at what he calls the realities of the situation in the Middle East. I'd suggest you perhaps go and get yourself a hot glass of sahlab or maybe something to drink, because Professor Chomsky will be speaking for about 35 minutes, but it's interesting all the way through. So let's listen then to a talk given in Vancouver by Noam Chomsky.